Welcome back to Just the Facts with me, Jill Wine Banks, and a very wonderful guest today, Matt Topic, a partner at Lovey & Lovey, a fantastic law firm that everyone should know about. I have been involved with them for, well, the wife of one of the founders is a sorority sister of mine, and we pledged more than 60 years ago. But one of Matt's expertises, among many, is FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. And he actually helped me, and he's helped the Better Government Association, which I'm a board member of. He did pro bono work for BGA. And for me, he helped me when I was writing my book, try to get information about myself from the government. And we're going to talk about that on his new podcast, but we have other topics to discuss today. Tell us about your new podcast, first of all.
Sure. Thanks, Jill, for having me on. I've long been a fan of yours. I'm really honored to be here. My client, Jason Leopold, and I, he's now at Bloomberg. He was previously at BuzzFeed. We've been working together for going on a decade. He's a reporter. He makes a lot of FOIA requests. I do a lot of FOIA lawsuits. And so we sort of crossed paths. We were on a panel together at a conference, and we've been like long lost brothers kind of ever since then. So, you know, we have a lot of fun with it. We also take it really seriously, but I've done a lot of cases for him. We've been through a lot of FOIA battles together. And for a few years, we've kicked around the idea, you know, this would make a good podcast. We've got so many quirky, funny, interesting stories, but that at the same time really say a lot about our democracy and how it could be better and the importance of transparency. And so it finally came to fruition about a month ago through Bloomberg. You can get it wherever you listen. It's called Disclosure, because the podcast is all about our battles and getting records released and interesting stuff along the way.
So, and as I said, we're going to talk about my experience trying to get information about myself. But I think I want to start with a question that's been bothering me, which is, I know what Freedom of Information Act is and why it's important. And I wondered why we needed the Jeffrey Epstein Act, Transparency Act, to get the documents from the government, because Freedom of Information Act allows you to get the government's documents. So why did they need to pass a special law to get documents that are in the possession of the government? And secondly, why wasn't the oversight and subpoena, the oversight responsibilities of Congress and their subpoena power, enough to get the documents? Why did we have to go through the drama of Donald Trump being totally embarrassed by having a almost unanimous vote to pass the act? But why was it necessary?
Well, it's a great question, Jill. It really shouldn't have been necessary. With one caveat, which is there may be some things that the Epstein Act calls for disclosure on that FOIA might allow to be withheld based on exemptions. So there could be a little bit of a delta where an example would be, you know, names of anyone who's on an Epstein client list, if it exists. Probably the government would take the position that it would be exempt to release that kind of information. But I don't think the Epstein Act would allow that to be withheld. It allows victim information to be withheld, but not, offender or potential offender information.
Well, doesn't it say anything that would embarrass could be withheld? Or it says anything that would be embarrassing cannot be withheld in the Transparency Act?
In the FOIA or in the Epstein Act?
Would FOIA allow it?
So FOIA doesn't allow you to withhold things just because they might be embarrassing, but there are personal privacy exemptions. Now, those are balanced against the public interest in disclosure. And given, you know, how much public attention and interest there's been around Epstein and whether there is or isn't a list and whether powerful people were being protected, you know, I think that all gives rise to a very strong public interest that means it's not a guarantee that names would be withheld under FOIA. But you also have the problem of the federal government just taking forever in fighting over releasing Epstein records. There have been a number of FOIA Epstein lawsuits. There's one that's been going on for 10 years.
Really?
Sort of taken on a whole new kind of life right now. And it's sort of been up on appeal and back, and then like investigations close, and then that changes the analysis. So they've been on this literally an odyssey for 10 years. And now that is one of the vehicles by which, if the government doesn't comply with the Epstein Act, then, because there's no teeth in it, there's no private cause of action. I can't sue, you can't sue, nobody can sue the DOJ for not releasing anything under the Epstein Act, but you can under FOIA. FOIA is what actually has teeth. So I think these two things are kind of going to work together and hopefully get us to where we'll have full disclosure of whatever there is or isn't. Is there a list or isn't there? What's in the records? I mean, tons of people want to know. And I think hopefully now we're headed in a direction of finally making that happen, thanks to a nearly unanimous vote of Congress.
So two things occur to me listening to you. One is, I hope you find a client who wants to sue under FOIA to get release. But the second is inconsistent with that, because I personally, as a former Department of Justice prosecutor, am convinced that all of this information is grand jury, protected by grand jury secrecy, and that the importance of grand jury secrecy outweighs the purient public interest in getting these documents, and that we do serious damage to justice in America by having a release that's based simply on "we want to know." And on the other hand, there is the right of Congress to see, are our laws being followed? And was there some bad judgments made in the prosecution, or the lack of prosecution, the favorable deal that Epstein got? Those are legitimate reasons for Congress to investigate, but that doesn't mean public disclosure, which is what we're all waiting for. So I am bothered by that. And I also wonder, are we going to see anything? I am wondering whether Donald Trump hasn't learned from Richard Nixon, who did not destroy the tapes and turn them over and ended up having to resign, whether Donald Trump learned and he's already destroyed anything that might hurt him.
Yeah, you got a few things there. Let me jump into that. I think it's probably a lot harder to get away with destroying federal records now than it was on the Nixon tapes, because there was a very small universe of people who even knew about those tapes. And, now you have documents that proliferate, you know, in multiple copies in multiple places, and there people email them, and they're all over the place. I think that is, if you were inclined to try to get away with doing something like that, you'd be really playing with fire. Cause I think it'd be kind of hard to pull that off, but that doesn't mean that there aren't other ways that they kind of bury it or mischaracterize what the documents are, or don't do a good enough job actually looking for them. I take your point about, you know, sort of just there's the interest in knowing if there's a list, who's on the list, like that. There is some amount of interest in that for its own sake. But I think we, for a while now, have been at a point where it transcends that. There have been legitimate questions about the plea deal that Epstein got, about the veracity of the investigation, whether they really did a good job, and whether, in the words, this is words that federal courts have used sometimes in this context when they're deciding whether to release things, did the government have the goods and decide not to prosecute anyway? Did they pull their punches? Right. And that's particularly, you know, a thing people care about, and rightfully so, when it's possibly very powerful people who are involved. People are suspicious that maybe the government, you know, there's one set of rules for the politically connected rich people, and there's another set of rules for everybody else. And I think that this is now transcended into that level. You're right about the need for grand jury secrecy, and it is pretty extensive, but there are times where I feel like it can get in the way of holding prosecutors accountable. And I mean, no offense to you as a former prosecutor, but I think our country is built on the idea of sort of trust but verify, or, you know, we want to make sure our government officials are satisfying their jobs properly.
Well, there is a way, of course, to proceed properly. We did it in Watergate. Under Rule 6, grand jury is secret, but can be released for a legitimate judicial proceeding. So we went to court and we asked the court for permission to turn over the grand jury information to the impeachment committee, because that was a legitimate, and at the time, a reasonable and possible solution to the problem of a corrupt and criminal president. We got the permission from the court to turn over those documents, and they became the basis for articles of impeachment. So we saved the impeachment committee a lot of time because they didn't have to reinvestigate what we already had. And that is legitimate. And that's why I'm saying, why couldn't the court, the Congress have gone to court and said, please waive Rule 6 because we need this information to find out whether there was corruption in the criminal justice system at the Department of Justice in terms of how they proceeded in trying him. So, which goes back to, you know, your point and mine that we didn't need this Transparency Act. There were a lot of other ways. And the other thing is, of course, Donald Trump could have just said, release it.
Absolutely.
And he has criminal immunity. So if he did and they did, well, you know, then that would have been that and we would have had it. But obviously he's hiding something. Let's move to, I know that you're using the Mueller report to elevate your computer so that the picture of you looks good. You had a role in the Mueller report with FOIA. So talk about that because that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, this is episode one of our podcast, by the way, is our battle to get more information released from the Mueller report. So as people may recall, and this is like thousands of news cycles ago, but, you know, I think we all remember the Mueller investigation and the anticipation about what it was going to find. And then it was completed. It goes to the Attorney General Bill Barr, and then he releases his own summary that he sends to Congress. But they're not releasing
misleading
the report.
Summary
that many have said that, including Robert Mueller himself, I believe, has said that was not a fair characterization of the totality of the report. Right? The whole thing to me stank like just typical kind of swampy Washington spin kind of stuff that a lot of people get really frustrated about politicians doing all the time. There's a right to the record under FOIA. And so Jason, my co-host and client, Jason Leopold, made a request for the Mueller report. And we sued when the deadline came and went. And they, as I recall, they took an extension of time in part because it didn't reside in the, like they had to go to another office to get a copy or something really just silly. So we got into court. We had a great judge who was willing to really move the case along quickly. And we challenged almost all of the redactions. Like we wanted to hold them to their burden of proof and say, this is a historic document. It's an important document. And if Justice Department, if you're going to withhold anything, we're going to make you prove that there was a basis to withhold it under the statute, because that's how FOIA works. You make a request. If the government withholds things, the government has to prove that there's a basis in the law to do that. You don't have to disprove it. It's their burden of proof. So so we went through all that challenge. A few additional things got released. Most everything was up. The withholdings were upheld. But we went up on appeal to the D.C. Circuit on a very specific set of redactions, which was the analysis by the special counsel on why charges weren't brought against certain people, most notably Donald Trump Jr. So if you looked at the report, you could see Don Jr.'s name is all over it. You can see they were investigating about ties to things with WikiLeaks and like computer intrusion. You could see what they were looking at. But when you got down to the declination decision where they explain why they're not going to charge, they just blacked all that out. And so we didn't get to know why didn't you charge Don Jr.? And I thought that was a really interesting and important question, because you had the nonstop drumbeat that this is a politically motivated witch hunt. This is a politically motivated witch hunt. And I felt like you could put that to the test in part by looking at how they treated the son of the president of the United States, who I don't think they ever hauled in front of the grand jury. As I recall, he wasn't voluntarily sitting for interviews. I could be wrong, but that's my recollection. And they did not bring him to the grand jury. So we wanted to see, well, what'd you do with Don Jr.? And we ended up winning at the D.C. Circuit. The oral argument was great. I mean, the judges completely saw it the way we saw it. This is about understanding the government's decision. And that is what FOIA is all about. And so we got that We got that unredacted, and now we've learned that they considered charging him with a computer intrusion crime. They believed that there was sufficient evidence to charge him with the misdemeanor version, but applying the DOJ principles of prosecution, or I forget what they call that document, yeah, they decided they weren't going to charge him with that, even though they felt they could have. And they didn't want to charge him with the felony version because they didn't think they could prove that the thing that he got as a result of the computer intrusion was worth at least, I think it was a $5,000 minimum. So that, to me, told us a lot about the Mueller investigation that we didn't know. It told us a lot more about how aggressive they were or were not. And a point that I always make to people is the decision to withhold that was jointly by the special counsel in Mueller's folks and the attorney general and in Bill Barr's folks. Like, they collectively withheld that, which to me showed, you know, in my world, this is a lot of what the problem is. It is an institutional bipartisan problem of government officials not being as transparent as the law requires them to.
So just out of curiosity, and maybe to defend Mueller, there is a rule about legal analysis and the thought processes that is protected in general. So would that have applied here, where this was clearly the legal analysis?
Yeah, they didn't claim that it was like attorney work product or attorney client privileged or deliberative. They just said it would be an invasion of Donald Trump Jr.'s privacy. And we successfully said, well, you already diminished his privacy quite a bit by putting his name all over this report. And this would shed light on a important governmental decision, and there was good case law that supported us.
Great argument. Okay, I can go for that. We may have to challenge some of the redactions in my response, which took years. My book had already been out for several years before they finally answered me, and then I learned absolutely nothing, which also goes to the classification system in the government. The first time I requested a file when I was a newbie attorney at DOJ, I got it back saying that I had to have a higher classification level in order to get it. And when I got the classification raised and got the documents, they were newspaper articles. It was newspaper articles.
Yeah.
I mean, really? That's classified? So anyway.
Welcome to my world, Jill.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. But I think it's important for people to understand how helpful FOIA can be, Freedom of Information Act, and how expert you are in getting that. The Better Government Association is one of its main pillars of mission is transparency in government. And so FOIA becomes extremely important tool for us in order to find out whether it's, how much are we paying for this government contract? Is this really the lowest bidder? And a zillion other things. So thank you for your service in this case. And I'm looking forward to being on your podcast and exploring what we can do with my FOIA response. Thank you very much.
It's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to that.
Thanks.